This episode is from the archives, so some of the subjects mentioned may be out of date.
Hello and welcome to another radio show from Peter Twist. And this week we talked to three people who are successful in the offline world as well as the online world. Paul Bars, George McKenzie and James Madouk. Paul Bars has been around for quite a while now, but has been recovering from a long illness. Luckily, his online income kept him and his family going through these tough times.
I run what I call more of a classical home business or home-based business. And the distinction is a lot of people, they say, oh, I work from home or I want to work from home. They straight away think, you know, network marketing, MLM, mail order. The next progression is, oh, internet, got to have a website, got to do this. What do I do? You get these questions, people online, you know, they say, what do I have to do to make money online? Do I sell ebooks? Do I do affiliate programs? How do I do this? How do I do that? With my business, I actually have five different divisions or five different sections, which in a nutshell really sell the same product, but to five different marketplaces.
Right.
And that, yeah, it goes from my website businesses, three of those are online, where I'm teaching and training or supplying services or resources to home-based business people online.
Yeah.
I do the same thing offline as well, where I, in one of those areas, I work consulting to small to medium enterprises, and that can be anywhere from, you know, a two-person business to a 10-person, but it's not the numbers of people. It's the, you know, one of my clients, for example, does 30 to $50,000 a year turnover in his first year just starting up. Another one will do $10 million this year.
Yeah. So, the number of employees is not necessarily related to the size of the business in a way.
No, it's the way in which they... for me, a small to medium enterprise can fall anywhere. I have another client who's an international distributor of automotive products. And they have agents all around the world, literally. So I consult to them and I teach them and I teach their staff how to look after and maintain their website. This is in areas of, say, the website marketing, which to me is different from internet marketing, very different.
Okay.
And in that, the same things, the very same things which I teach the small micro business, the home-based business people who want to work online through my home study course, I also consult to these others. Now, I do that because it's a business strategy. I know I can charge 10 times as much for my time over the phone with someone. Or one-on-one consultation, if I'm lucky enough they happen to live near me, as to what I can charge for something online.
Right.
Same as I have, yeah, same as I have that complete guide to home business success available in CD as well. And it's, again, many times more the price, but the value is there because it's a pack-and-wrap product. And I give people the option, monthly membership or the CD with membership to get the updates.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So I don't like, and when people come to me and say, I want to work from home, how do I get a website? That's their first, I've got to have a website.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a website.
Yeah.
You're likely to make more money if you don't have a website initially.
Right.
If you want a service offline, because offline people will pay more.
So what you're saying is that don't just concentrate on having a website. Do what we would call the old-fashioned contact of like phone and mail and stuff like that, yeah? Is that what you mean? Yeah.
Everything, that's right. And that's what I try and teach people is to have a well-rounded, that business experience covering everything. I know one of the seminars that I ran recently or in towards the end of last year was, I titled it Home Business Sales Success, but it was based on my 7 years as a corporate salesperson.
Right.
All I did was just fine-tune it so that people could learn how to use these strategies in their home-based business offline. And yet, you can use the same strategies, but you've got to do it differently online. I taught them how to use their phone, how to answer the phone, how to write a letter, how many times they should follow up, how to set up a follow-up system. Now, online, sure, you've got autoresponders, all these types of things, but you need to have the distinction set up and at least the belief that if you can, goodness me, if you can sell something online, I guarantee you can sell it offline. It's so much easier.
Right.
So much easier offline to make money than it is online. I think that's where people fall down, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that this is one thing that comes up all the time in the interviews I do, and you've heard some of these before, is that this big kind of myth, really, that you can do every single thing online, and it's all automatic, and you can lie in bed all day and make money. It's not quite like that, is it?
I wish. I'm lying in bed right now. No, I wish.
Yeah.
It's possible, but it's the rare few.
Or you've done your 6 months' work before that starts to happen.
Exactly.
Yeah.
People, you'd get this too, and I know others will. I just came across your website. It's fantastic. an overnight success. It's like in the rock industry, guy who's been doing the pub crawl for the last 20 years gets a number one hit. He's an overnight success. It's not true.
Yeah.
It actually took 2 years of research, development, planning, and building for me to put together the first edition of my home study course, and of course I've now fine-tuned that over the following 18 months.
Yeah,
up to about edition 3 now. I try and update it majorly once a year, and it's moved into cover. I've realised myself that there are, well, let's look at the famous numbers, 9/11, September 11.
Yeah,
I don't know about you, but my internet business died.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Significantly, I'm talking 2/3 drop off. For a good 3 to 4 months following that.
I think there was a double problem there as well, in that as an internet marketer, I was more worried about whether I should be sending out emails as well. So, apart from people not buying stuff, I think a lot of people backed off as well, didn't they? Apart from the usual crazy spamming people, but,
the spam stuff. What do you do about that? Hit the delete button. I don't even get into that argument. Delete really quick.
No, I know.
But that's true, and that was good and due and out of respect, and various things happen from time to time like that, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that, but life does go on.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate not to have had any recent family tragedy since I've been working for myself, so I haven't experienced that myself, but out of respect for those, sure, you do back off a little while, but I can say that September, October, November, December period, which for us here in Australia leads to our quiet season, summer holidays, where it's quiet anyway.
Yeah, so that was
if I didn't have my offline businesses, I would have been in trouble as far as the income goes. I'd like to say to folks that, and there's a perception out there that if you've got a good popularity online, people get to know your name, then you're obviously in the $500,000 bracket plus. Okay, that's the 0.001%. But most of us who are fortunate enough to make a full-time living out of our home-based businesses, online or off, we can still be broke. Now, I'm not broke, but we can be, because broke is simply spending as much as you're getting.
Yeah.
You can earn $200,000 a year, spend $210,000, and you're broke.
Paul Bars, and to find out more about his Success University, click on his name. Well, like myself, my next guest has a media background, specifically in American TV. Here's George McKenzie.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure, Peter, and this is funny because I've told people it's so different for me being the one who's being asked the questions.
Yeah.
So I have a little case of stage fright right now. It's so unusual. I'm just not used to being the one on the hot seat, so to speak. So it gives me an idea of what guests on my radio show have to go through sometimes.
Well, I was going to say, just to introduce yourself, just tell us a little bit about the show that you do.
It's a show for seniors, and it's on a station in San Antonio, Texas, which for those who are outside the U.S. may not be that familiar with the geography. It's basically the middle, lower part of the country, and it's very close to the Mexican border. So, but it's also a very military community. We had 5 military bases here for a long time, and a lot of people retired here, so there was a market for seniors. These are folks who had been in the military and had gotten out and decided to retire here. So there's a very large senior population in town that's very computer savvy, by the way, because of his military background. And so I was approached by a station to do a talk show on Sunday mornings for that senior audience. And what we focus on is travel issues, which, of course, seniors who are retired have plenty of opportunity to do it. They like food. We talk about that a lot. They like medical topics. They like consumer issues because most of them come from a generation where they're very careful with their money.
Yeah.
and they like legal and financial issues. So those are the things that we talk about on the show, and it's on once a week on Sunday morning on KLUP Radio. The Loop is what they call it, and right. It can be found on the World Wide Web if anyone is interested. There comes my blatant plug.
Peter. Yeah, please go ahead.
It's www.klup.com, and we're on 11 a.m. Central Time in the U.S. on KLUP.com if right. anyone wants to tune in. Thank you for the opportunity to plug.
No problem. I'll send you a bill.
I'll send it on to the station.
On your website, George, you talk about veteran advice there. You call yourself a veteran broadcaster. So how long have you been in the business then?
I just passed my 30th anniversary last month. In fact, Peter, I was hired 30 years ago, 1972. But the actual anniversary, I still remember the date, as most people who got into broadcasting at one time or another do.
Yeah.
September 16th, 1972 was the first time I ever put my voice on the air for public consumption, so to speak. And that was in a tiny little town in Indiana, Pennsylvania, in the northeast U.S., and the home of Jimmy Stewart, the actor that some people will recognize. And interesting, I don't know what your background in broadcasting is, Peter, but this was a very small station. And we used to say, you know, the old Mary Tyler Moore show here in the U.S. was, they had an anchorman who said it all started in a 5,000-watt radio station somewhere. Ours was more like 1,000 watts, and if someone flipped on the air conditioning, it went down to 500.
Yeah, so, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Very small station. But I've also done, I was on TV for 18 years in a row as a sportscaster, got out of the business for a while, out of the TV business, did some radio. My wife and I invested in some businesses here in Texas. We owned 5 Subway sandwich shops, which I'm sure most of your listeners will be familiar with because they are worldwide.
Yeah.
And we did that for a while, and then I had a chance to go back into TV, and I went back as a news anchorman for a statewide network here in Texas. And for the last 2 years, I've pretty much done full-time internet and full-time radio. And that's my broadcasting background, really.
Right.
Probably a longer answer to the question than you really wanted, but basically the short answer is about 30 years of broadcasting experience.
Now, it's interesting because people who send me emails, and you must get this as well, they kind of send you an email saying, I'm struggling, it's okay for you, you're a broadcaster, and you can write, and you can do this and that and that. So I think you and I are fairly similar in that we're kind of using our broadcasting skills to do our thing on the internet. And if you can explain a couple of your products, which you've got on your website at the moment, or just the titles of them all.
The thing that people seem to struggle with most is press releases.
Yeah.
And so I've put together one called the Instant Press Release Toolkit. It helps people write press releases. And I also have a couple of books that are part of that. One is called Going Public, and that is techniques and strategies you can use to deal with media. And the other is Start Spreading the News, which is it's basically the thinking behind a press release and what the media needs to respond positively to a press release. Yeah. That was a little more than the titles, Peter, but again, I'm into blatant self-promotion, as most people on the internet are.
Because I was reading somewhere the other day that, you know, a couple of years ago, you can more or less send a simple press release to the local newspaper or whatever saying, hey, I've got a website. But of course, now that's all changed. So it's a lot more competitive now, isn't it, to get your message across?
Yes, it is. But the rules are still the same for what will get attention, whether it be newspaper, radio, or TV. Everybody who's in the media business or the journalism business looking for the same thing. And maybe I'm getting a little ahead of your question here.
No problem.
They're all looking for the same thing. And what they're looking for is something that has what I call news value. In other words, it's got to be interesting to people. There's got to be a reason that they would want to know about it. And whether it's radio, TV, or newspaper, if you can find something that has news value, and the way you sort of figure that out is you ask yourself, what about this would people either like to know or need to know? Why would they need to know this, or why would they like to know this?
Yeah.
And if you can give yourself some bullet points and answer that question, that's basically what people in the media are looking for. They're looking for information that's interesting to people, and they're looking for it in the form of a story.
Yeah.
And if I can digress a little bit,
yeah.
People say, well, it's a news release, it's got to be full of facts. Maybe not so, because think about the seminars that you've been to, Peter, and classes and such. You sit down in front of somebody, and, you know, after the break they come up, and they start out their presentation by saying, statistics show.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of start tending to nod off. But if they get up in front of you and the first thing they say is, once upon a time,
yeah,
like they're going to tell you a story, you put down your pencil and you start to pay attention.
Yeah.
Same thing with the media. If you can tell a story, and that story has some news value and gives people information they either need to know or would like to know, then you've got something that the media is interested in. And that rule has been in effect since forever. And the only thing you have to do with your website now, because there are gazillions of websites out there, you have to figure out a way to tie your website into a story or into information in some way, shape, or form that the media wants to share with its audience.
Yeah, yeah.
Long answer to a short question.
And there you go. I see that's instant response. Your phone was ringing straight away there. As you mentioned,
and we haven't even mentioned my website
yet. I know,
yet.
It's amazing. You see the power of radio.
Well, that's one of the things I love about working on the Internet is you can do it from home.
Yeah, that's right.
And I'm on the phone from home right now, and that's the other line, probably calling for one of our two kids.
Okay.
Okay.
So just a general question, really. I mean, is it possible to get free publicity in any kind of media, whether it's press, TV, radio? Because they all have the same kind of newsrooms and news desks, I suppose, don't they?
Yes, you hit the nail on the head. There are still those same basic principles that I just talked about. They're looking for a story. They're looking for information that they can share with their audience that the audience either needs to know or wants to know. And I'm sorry to keep repeating that, but I will hammer on that for as long as anyone ever asks me the question.
That was George McKenzie. James Maduka is a prolific writer and teacher in online and offline marketing.
My background is fundamentally different than most of the people that are selling stuff online now.
Mm-hmm.
If I go back and I take a look at, you know, the truck driver, the pizza delivery boy, the high school dropout, all of these people sort of, for lack of a better word, fell into internet marketing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And perhaps, I don't know for sure, but some of them might have been at the right place at the right time. And they don't have formal backgrounds in teaching or speaking or education or any of those particular disciplines. And, you know, I've been a professional speaker for the last 12 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a corporate trainer for the last 12 years. So when I started into internet marketing, I made a lot of mistakes just because I tried to do what I was doing in the corporate world and trying to do it online, and of course it didn't work.
Mm.
But I think the biggest thing is that, and we talked about a little bit earlier just off the air, was, you know, that most people don't, there's still two groups of people. There's the people that understand that they're trying to build a small business.
Yeah.
And that it's a long-term commitment to building a business. And it's something that you can work on as opposed to work in. And if you've ever had the chance to interview Michael Gerber, who wrote The E-Myth.
Yeah.
That's a great person to talk to. That's one of his sayings. And still, you look at a lot of the material that's being produced, and whether it's, you know, some information in an ebook or an interview or whatever, it tends to be sort of piecemeal or ad hoc about an experience, and it has nothing to do with creating a business that's self-sustaining that will actually run by itself.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose the positive thing, though, I would class myself not having the same knowledge as yourself,
yeah,
but I've been slowly kind of working away for probably the last 2 years seriously online. And,
yeah.
And probably like you, I've seen people, you know, rising stars, but I've also seen falling stars. And I kind of think to myself, well, you know, I'm still here. I'm still plodding along, but
that's
I'm still
right.
here. Yeah.
That's right. And
yeah.
And I think the difference, you know, there's get rich quick.
Yeah.
And I would much prefer to get rich consistently.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
and that changes. If you come from that sort of place, the way that you create products, the way that you market products, the way that you treat customers, the way that you work with affiliates, all of the things that you do online changes because it's a long-term point point of view, as opposed to, man, I can make X number of dollars in 3 weeks if I only do this.
Yeah, and of course, as we're also discussing off-air, and this is a criticism of the business opportunities market before the internet, is that a lot of these people have never worked for themselves or run their own businesses, and that's what's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's stuff to do other than selling.
Yeah.
And you know, I think you've got to have a much longer term, broader view, a bigger perspective of what you're actually involved in, and you know that where it ends up really making the difference is with your customers, and you end up making long term relationships with people, as I'm sure you have.
Yes,
with
yes.
the people that you've met that become friends.
Exactly, and also I think sometimes these other people, shall we say, have a little bit of an advantage because of their ignorance. They perhaps don't worry about making some of the decisions, whereas you know I find I worry too much about stuff because I kind of know what can go wrong. do you find that can hold you back sometimes as well?
Well, yeah, and you know, I learned a lesson last Friday. I wrote a book called Get Ranked First on Google because I have about 8 sites that have number one rankings on Google.
Yeah.
And I figured, what happened is I did it by accident, and then I went back and said, oh, that's pretty neat. I better figure out how I did it.
Yeah.
So I ended up doing Get Ranked First on Google, but I did another site last week called buildmylist.com. And I finished the actual website a week ago Sunday.
Yeah.
So it was the beginning of May. And I did, about 3 days later, I went and searched on Google for build email list. Or build email lists were the two phrases that I used. And I looked on Google, and of course I had a number two ranking out of 1.7 million pages. And then for build email lists, plural, I had a number three out of 2.2 million pages. And of course what I did is I told everyone.
Yeah.
And, really excited. Oh, this is great. You know, new site. It's only 3 days old. Yada, yada, yada. And then the interesting thing was that there's a thing on Google that I'd forgotten about called FreshBot.
Yeah.
And what it is, it's sort of a fresh listing that goes up, but it's not the real listing.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So the next day that I went to look for the listings, I didn't exist on Google. And I sent an email out to everyone saying, yeah, I've got these great listings on Google. My stuff works. And all of that. So, you know, it's about making mistakes as quickly as possible. And you get afraid of making them.
Yeah.
You get afraid of making them. And that holds, you know, some people that think too hard about it, it holds them back. And other people that are just starting, you know, it's okay because they don't really care if they make some mistakes up front.
Yeah. And again, most of the people I speak to, I think they say a couple of things. They say the more successful you are, the more mistakes you tend to make.
Yes.
And the more well-known you become, the more kind of complaints you get from people about one thing or another. Do you find that as well?
I remember, like, I started online in 95 and I never sold anything really online until 2001.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a lot of mistakes and I made the same ones over and over again, which is not too intelligent, but it happened. But it's the first thing that I noticed, you know, especially when you start building an email list, is I took it personally when people left.
Yeah.
And it was like, why did they leave? What did I do? What's wrong? And I started, you know, now I don't really care about it. I understand that perhaps someone isn't interested in what I have to say, and that's okay. It doesn't really fit their requirements. But you know, it if you're coming from that point of view where, you know, you got to please everyone all the time, you just can't do it. Mm. And I think you're right. There's you're it's like a beacon in the night kind of thing. When the more that you do, and the longer you've been online, and the more that you sell, you tend to attract some criticism, and you've got to be able to deal with that.
Yeah, I didn't realize the number of names I've been called as well. some of them I didn't even know, but it's quite funny. What I like to do, I think I discussed with Terry Dean the other week, is I actually reply to people, which really shocks them, you know, because unfortunately, you know, it's a product of the way the internet is that all these emails are going into black holes, so people don't expect to get a reply. So that's always quite fun to do.
Yeah, you know. And I'll phone people too.
Yeah.
And I love to phone people, especially when there's problems.
Yeah, Yeah,
and again,
just
you know, people don't expect to be phoned back. And again, it's, you know, one of the things that I've tried to do is, you know, I put my picture on my sites. I have my phone number on all of my sites. I have a real email address that I answer on all of my sites. And I think it's about being accessible as well makes a big difference.
I haven't said I was going to mention this before, but, you know, like when I was at this seminar last week, one of the questions I asked was, you know, if we're all living this internet lifestyle of, you know, working at a distance and everything, why do we have to have seminars? So I'm going to ask you that question in a minute, because you, I think you do a lot of this webcasting and a lot of coaching. I mean, do you find that, you know, which would people prefer? Do you like to do a mixture of the two, if possible?
Yeah, like my background is, I started off, have you ever heard of Bob Proctor?
Yeah,
Bob Proctor was he's a motivational speaker, and he's in my opinion, he's probably the best speaker that in the world today. He's an excellent speaker. He's a great motivational speaker, but he's just a great speaker.
Yeah.
And in 1987, that's how I got started, sort of in the seminar business. I was the VP of sales for his company for 2 years. So
yeah.
I spent 2 years in the seminar business, and it is a business unto itself, the seminar business, and there's pros and cons to it. And I do virtual seminars. I've got about 250 hours of virtual seminars done where I do stuff on a whiteboard.
Yeah.
And audio in my studio and stream it out to people, and that's how I do courses. But I think there still is value in the fact that you get to be in front of someone else physically.
Mm.
And part of it has to do with the emotional content. See, most people don't understand that most of the communication that you make to people, and whether you're trying to sell something or teach something to someone, 55% of your communication is emotional. It's nonverbal.
Yeah.
And whether or not you can't transfer that. Even in a virtual seminar where you can use your voice language, the way you use words, the way you use tone and tempo and pitch and the text that you use and the pictures that you use. But there's a whole component, and it's non-physical, it's emotional, and that's what really comes out in seminars. So I think there's still a need for seminars, but they've got to be structured in a way that it's actually a learning environment as opposed to a transfer of content. And the best seminars are the ones where you can actually have a learning experience of doing something as opposed to just knowing something.
And just sitting and taking notes and falling asleep at the back.
You can do that online. You can do that online today.
Yeah. So when you do your webcast, do you do these live and then record them and put them, you know, on the website for later on, or how do they work?
Well, I'll tell you how I got started, because one of the things, I started doing them live, and what I did is every Monday morning I would do a live webcast, basically, and it started off, they'll tell you the true story, it started off with the site that my wife started, and it's still around, it hasn't been updated in like 3 years, but it's weekendcrafts.com,
right.
And she was heavily into crafts, and one of the Christmases we got a video camera, and I had PCs at home, and she was doing crafts every weekend, so I figured, well, why don't I film her doing the crafts, and we'll have a membership site on how to do crafts.
Right.
And that's how I got started doing it, was learning about what's involved in actually taking the video, getting it into the computer, and transferring it to people. So, and this was like 4 years ago, so I learned a whole bunch of stuff not to do when it comes to webcasting.
Right.
And you know, we had big, big, big files, and people were on download, and there was firewall issues, and, you know, I'm glad I wasn't trying to earn my entire livelihood from that site, because it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But what did happen is we learned about what's the best way to get content delivered to people so that they could learn quickly. And what I ended up doing is, you know, as a sales trainer and a speaker, what I started to do is every Monday morning, I would just do a 7 to 10 minute session it started off with. And on Monday, I'd just announce it to my list and say, look, I'm going to be talking about cold calling or list building or search engines or, you know, how to create info products or whatever. And then I would just talk for a little while in front of the camera. And the neat thing is when you get into webcasting is you can do a live event, and, you know, most of the systems will automatically archive everything for you so that you get a copy of it.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, after I'd done this for a while, I ended up that I could do it every day kind of thing. Right. And I just ended up building sessions and sessions and sessions. And right now I've got probably 350 to 400 different sessions that have been done over the past 2.5 to 3 years. And they're all either on video or some of them are just audio. But the one that I really, really like is the whiteboard session that we do.
Yeah, that's really impressive. It's quite freaky to see somebody writing on the screen in front of you. When I first saw it, I thought it was very strange, but it's brilliant. It's a really good idea.
Yeah, and I like it because it works great on a dial-up modem.
Yeah, right.
And in terms of video, here's sort of the training background. If I'm trying to teach you about internet marketing or about something of value to you, whether or not you see my head has nothing to do with learning anything.
Yeah.
But if I can diagram a concept or a picture or a strategy out, or show you a screen capture or bring you to a website and talk about the website while I'm doing it, and then diagram out and mark it up, for example, you can learn very quickly, and it dramatically compresses the time that it takes for people to learn ideas, allows them to go out and try it quicker. But the best thing is for a marketer or an educator or a trainer or a speaker is that I can pump these things out quickly.
James Madouk. Well, that wraps up another show for another week. This is Peter Twist saying thanks for listening, and I'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.